That's Andy Baskin, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jeff Phelps. Dan Menigan is sitting behind the glass right now, standing actually. And of course, we have Anthony Allant with us right now. The Brown season starting 1 week from Sunday. I can't wait. You can't wait. Let's get some real football games and away we go. But the talk building up everything going on in this season is just, to me, fun. This has been really good. And there's a lot about this football team that, to me, is a curiosity. A curiosity in so many ways. We'll break some of that down next week. But there was something that came out earlier this week that I saw and I thought, wow, that's really interesting. Back in the day, in fact, it was 1999, Tim Couch was the number one pick for the Browns. And there was conversation that Akili Smith.
Oh, it was the big debate.
Was under consideration for that.
And it was straight Gabriel Sanders debate.
Akili Smith was the first guy that made me think, wait a minute. You can't take a guy number one who had one good year of college football. And as it turned out, Akili Smith was competent, but didn't have a great pro career.
Yeah.
But he was a competent quarterback. And he was on Anscape on Monday, did an interview with Anscape, which is an ESPN
entity
platform. Yeah, whatever you want to call it. And he was asked about the Browns and he was asked about Shedeur Sanders. And Akili Smith, you know, he played in the NFL, played quarterback, did a good job. And he said this. He was not a great quarterback, but, you know, he had an NFL career.
Right.
He talked to them on Monday, and he said about Shedeur Sanders, he must embrace the situation, listen, and learn. He said that's his only path to the field. And then here's the direct quote. It's going to be hard, very hard. Just where he is right now and the things he needs to work on, it's a lot. If he stays positive and works hard, he still has a chance. But the tape is clear as day. This is Akili Smith on Shedeur Sanders of the Browns. And then he kept going. And the gentleman who wrote this story is Jason Reed. And Jason prefaced this last quote by saying, the eye test is too important to be ignored, Smith explained. And here's the explanation. This is Akili Smith on Shedeur Sanders. I know fans don't want to hear this, but you can't deny what the tape is saying. If you take some time, break down the tape, and you understand what concepts they're running, you see that Dillon Gabriel is ahead of Shedeur. No one who looks at the tape of those two and understands what they're looking at could see it any other way. Again, here's Akili Smith on Shedeur. Gabriel is ahead of him, and the big thing is pocket presence. He said Shedeur took a sack in that last preseason game. It was ridiculous. You had all these people blaming the line. He's dropping back too far. He had to step up in the pocket or throw the ball away. It's one or the other. And then kind of encapsulated by Jason Reed, he said, problem is, Smith said, few of Sanders' defenders on social media are viewing his situation realistically. They're thinking with their hearts. And then Akili Smith, it's fine to want him to do well. I hope it works out for him. But this stuff is happening on social media. It's not logical. Everyone was going hysterical and blaming the line. That wasn't on the line.
I'll go back. There's a couple points that I want to make on this. One, I think it, in the interest of fair, you do have to ask yourself, where did Akili Smith play? College.
Oregon.
And Mr. Gabriel?
Only 1 year, but Oregon last year.
I think Smith was only there, 2 years? He was a transfer, too, at that point, when he went there. Yeah, and so, yeah, because he went to Grossmont in 95-96, and then he was in Oregon 97-98. So I think in the interest of equal time, just to say that, I don't know that changes my opinion on what he had to say. The very first line, Jeff, in there about how hard it is and taking advantage. Do you still have that first line? The very first line.
Hold on, let me go back.
That you said.
Find it.
because I think Shador is actually...
It's going to be hard, very hard. Just where he's at right now and the things he needs to work on, it's a lot. If he stays positive, works hard, he still has a chance, but the tape is clear as day.
I thought there was another line in there where he's got...
Well, there are a lot of lines in
there. Yeah, but there was one early that, like, I think Shador actually said about, you know, I just got to do what I can do, take my chances, and when I get the opportunity, I'm going to take advantage. I thought there was an opportunity line in there, which, to me, that made sense. That's quarterback to quarterback. That's guys that understand how to play the game, and I think Shador, I think Shador knows what's going on here. I think he's been very honest in his press conferences.
Yeah.
I think he knows where his opportunities are. Was he frustrated the other day in the preseason? Yeah, he was frustrated. I get it. I want him to be frustrated. Like, I don't...
Can't argue with that.
I don't... You can't be like, I made a mistake.
But you also have to...
figure out how to fix it.
And you have to know you're on a team, and it's a team concept.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, what we floated as an idea was right, it seems. Kevin Stefanski wanted to see if the field goal kicker could make a game-winning kick. And how are you going to get in field goal position? Well, not with what Shador showed you earlier in the game. Maybe Tyler Huntley can do that, and they did. You know, penalties help, but yeah, it happened. More from Akili Smith here. And this is interesting. He said, I was watching ESPN and NFL analysts Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark, talking about the tape. I agree with what they were saying. Dylan Gabriel's tape is just better. I agree with them because I'm seeing the same things. And then he had another good quote here. Anyone who has such a long way to go has to keep his nose clean, not turn on the organization and keep working. He has to put everything he has into continuing to get better each day. And that way, even if it doesn't happen in Cleveland, you're still giving yourself a chance. You'd show other teams that you want this, how much it means to you, and then maybe it happens somewhere else. But I think
it's even harder as a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
Because every team knows they had a chance to take you at one point.
Now, I take all of what he said there, Akili Smith, former Bengal, and I think of it this way. Nothing wrong with any of that. These are both young quarterbacks, and they have work to do.
Yeah.
That's okay. See,
why do people get so crazy when we say, hey, let Joe Flacco start this thing and let's see where it goes while you give these – literally, they just started. I don't care if they've been here since the draft. I mean, there's still bathrooms in the facility in Berea they don't know how to get to if they need to get there. Give them a couple minutes to understand where they're at, what they're doing, and how they can get better. Because the league is ruthless.
You know, my hope for the whole thing was that somebody whose age started with a 2 would be good enough to beat out Joe. And they weren't. And Kenny Pickett wasn't on the field, couldn't be healthy enough. And Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders weren't good enough yet to beat out Joe. Okay, good decision by the Browns. I mean, you don't want to put a rookie out there and have him completely overmatched or not be able to give your team the best chance to win.
Right.
I was hoping one of them would elevate their game and be able to do that. They couldn't do it for game one. Can they do it sometime during this season? Maybe they can.
Well, I think people felt that Sanders did that in game one, that by throwing 2 touchdown passes.
Yeah, well, Gabriel did it in game...
his efficiency on third down 3 to me just was impressive.
Gabriel's?
His poise. Really good. And I got all that, and I understood. But I also think that you're in a position where you have 2 young quarterbacks. And
both had their moments, Andy, and both had other moments that weren't very good.
True. And what is that called? That's a rookie.
That's learning.
That's what rookies do.
Either a rookie.
You know, Joe has that too. I mean, Joe has a tendency to throw to the other team. That's bad, not good.
But see, here's the thing. It's either a rookie or a guy who's not going to be good enough to get it done.
Well, I think they think Joe's good enough to get it done.
No, I don't mean Joe. I mean the other guys.
No, I know. But, you're saying of which one they'll hang on to long term?
No, either guy or both. You know, I mean, because we can sit here and say, well, those are rookie mistakes. Yes, many times they are. But you also see those mistakes from veterans who just aren't very good quarterbacks.
No, that's fair.
You know, and so we have to sit here and wait as the Browns figure out, okay, can Shador be a good quarterback in this league? Can Dylan Gabriel be a good quarterback in this league? And then that's okay.
There is a challenge here for both of these guys, too, and for Shador a little bit. The challenge is harder because he is a third-string quarterback. I mean, let's face it. I mean, who knows? We may see Gabriel against Cincinnati. If something goes sideways.
We could see him on the second play of the game.
You're right.
What did Aaron Rodgers got hurt in New York on, Dan, was it his third play as a New York Jet or was it his fourth play? Third or fourth play as a Jet, torn Achilles.
The first drive, and I think it was might have been even the first pass play.
He's out. you know, for the season. Okay, well, that could happen. You don't want it to, but that could happen. So we'll see how that plays out. Dylan Gabriel is in a position as right now the backup quarterback where if he gets his chance, Andy, and I hope he does despite the fact that I know what it means, he gets his chance if Joe Flacco gets hurt or if Joe Flacco doesn't play well.
Right.
I want Joe to be healthy and I want him to play well. But boy, do I want to see Dylan Gabriel. And he'll be the first guy up, at least as of now. And then we'll find out, okay? Could this guy possibly keep the Browns from drafting a quarterback next year?
Do you remember how I said Kevin seems to be doing things a little bit differently, more intense, more intensity? I actually think that when he made the decision to take Sanders out and put Huntley in to get that game-winning field goal, it's almost like a good manager going to get the closer in some ways, or the experienced guy to finish up the game to make sure that you can close it out. I wonder if things go sideways for Joe. Remember, he didn't say, like, who was it, the coach that said, this is our quarterback for the entire season? Was that Indy?
Yeah,
with Daniel Jones. He said, he's our starter for the whole season. You know, Kevin didn't say that about Joe.
He said he's starting week one.
And so it makes you wonder if that's what they're going to say about their starting quarterback. What happens if things go, I'm just saying, what if things go sideways for Joe in the first game? I don't want them to, trust me. I want him to be able to get
well,
to
none of us do.
I don't want any of that to happen.
You're right.
But I wonder, in Kevin's mind, in a traditional situation, would he stay with the veteran quarterback the entire game? Or in the fourth quarter, would he go to the bullpen? That's my question. And so I want to see if Kevin has changed maybe some philosophy on that too.
We'll be talking more Browns throughout the day. Throughout the week ahead, because the Cincinnati Bengals come into town a week from Sunday. As things get going, I can't wait. Bill Bender covers football for the Sporting News. Bill's based here in Ohio. He's going to join us next, right here on The Fan.
Yeah.
It's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. College football, getting ready to get really cranked up tomorrow. Ohio State fans going bananas with Texas and all that. Mm-hmm. And the Browns, of course, starting in a week. NFL getting all fired up next week. To get a little spotlight on all of that, we go to the Fan Hotline. He's the senior writer for the Sporting News. He's been with us many times before. He's back again. He's also the 2025 president of the Football Writers Association of America.
Ooh, nice.
Nice. He's Mr. Bill Bender. Hello, Bill.
Well done, Bill. Well done.
How about that?
It's an honor to do that. You know, the FWA has so many really great writers and friends, and you know, we get off to a lot of them will be in that box tomorrow for Texas Ohio State, so I can't wait. I probably should I live in Pickerington. I probably should drive up in a half hour just to make sure I get a parking spot. I think the atmosphere is going to be off the charts.
Yeah, Bill, how crazy is it right now? I'm coming down for the game too, and I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, it's going to be insane.
Yeah, and as far as noon game goes and showcases and game day and Corso and Portnoy, I mean, it's there's a lot of drama before we even get on the field. And then when we get on the field, I think something that stuck out this week is Sark and Brian Day both, they're advocates of this. You know, some coaches might be, man, I wish we played Grambling first. And they're going to go out and figure out what's what. 32 guys from last year's game were in NFL camps this year. So who are those new stars that shine? I think we know Caleb and Jeremiah and Arch. We know all those guys. It's who's those guys that come out of nowhere and turn out to be a hero in this game. And I think there's a lot of candidates for that.
Bill, I think it's interesting. It's a different Ohio State team this year than the one that won the national championship. They lost a lot of key guys. They have some key guys back, but you know, this is a team that can reload. Is this team going to be, I won't say as good as last year's team, but as competitive as last year's team on a week-in, week-out basis?
You know, in the 21st century, Ohio State's only had, like, one rough year, basically. You know what I mean? Like, they're built to do this. I would have to go do a study at some point and be like, no program – every program has a blip. Michigan, Alabama, Georgia. Ohio State really hasn't had one of those since Jim Tressel was hired, except for the 1 year, which you could argue was – ridiculous with the NCAA and Tattoo Gate and all that. The way I'm answering your question is they're going to be good. I really do. With the receivers you have, quarterback, I think Julian Sand will be fine. You know, there's some questions on defense for me. Who who steps up? Is it Kenyon Jackson? Is it C.J. Hicks that replaces the sacks? But when you can build a defense around Caleb Downs and build an offense around Jeremiah Smith, I think you'll do okay.
Bill, I got to tell you, just looking at with the schedule, I mean, not only Ohio State, Texas, but you got Alabama, Florida State, you got LSU and Clemson. I can't remember, and maybe I just have a short memory, the last time we had so many big games with big quarterbacks to get things going early on in the season. I think, and we were talking about it, we wondered if college football kind of saw and looked ahead at the schedule, realized the NFL was off this weekend, and said, man, we could really take advantage, or the TV networks in particular, Fox and ESPN, or CBS.
I haven't thought of it that way, but that's an outstanding point, because it is loaded this weekend, and next weekend, by now, it's Friday, I'm already looking at week two and saying, okay, what do I need to get on next week? Michigan-Oklahoma is really the only ranked game. So, to your point, I think that's an absolute factor. And not just the games, the storylines, LSU-Clemson, Death Valley versus Death Valley, and Brian Kelly, can he win an opener with the Tigers? Our Mike DeCourcy wrote an excellent piece on that today. Even Georgia Tech, Colorado tonight, they're not ranked, but we're going to watch. Sure. I sat up and watched Cincinnati, Nebraska all the way through, and not just because my daughter likes Taylor Swift. That was a really good football game.
Bill Bender joining us from the Sporting News. I think last year with the playoff was fascinating to watch, and I think, Bill, it's the beginning of the change in college football that I wonder if fans are going to be able to embrace and accept. And I say it for this reason. You had a two-loss football team win the national championship, and you had the national champion lose to the arch rival, and people are screaming for the head coach's job. And yet you get into the playoff, and you just steamroll a bunch of teams and win the national championship. Did last year, is that the blueprint for the change that I think is going to happen and is happening in college football? Are fans going to have to accept that?
Is NFLification a word? Because that's what's happening.
Yeah.
It really is. So I go back to Cleveland, and I always tell this story in the office with the changes to college football. That year that Cleveland beat Pittsburgh with Baker in Pittsburgh in a playoff game, nobody remembers those regular season games that year. But, I mean, that's what we remember, the playoff victory.
Right.
And the comparison would be Oregon-Ohio State last year.
Yeah.
I think I vaguely remember the regular season game. It was a great game. But I do remember Ohio State stomping them in the Rose Bowl. And I think that's what's happened here is we've moved toward like an NFL model of success. I get the James Franklin question a lot. And I said, if we called playoff semifinals Final Fours like we do in basketball,
yeah,
Franklin and Sark are fine. But it's that press to win a national title. I mean, Ryan Day's off the chopping block with that now. Now it's on Sark and Franklin. But I just think it moves the standard of success and we're pushing all that toward the playoff. I mean, guys, you could say it in one sentence. Ohio State lost to Michigan, maybe the worst loss in program history, and turn around and win a national title. That's the world we live in now.
You think Buckeye fans can accept that, though? Because some Ohio State fans will say it was more important to beat Michigan, but they didn't, than to win a national championship. We had people call the show and tell us that, Bill. I thought they were insane, but that's what they thought.
Well, that's more real than, I don't know how old you guys are. I'm 45. Okay, so the generation.
Yeah, we're in the same neighborhood, yeah. Bill.
I'm 18. So.
Yeah, I knew you were 18. I figured you were like 22. But
my kids are older than I am. It's crazy.
It's nuts.
Yeah. No, but my point is, so if you grew up when we did, that was everything. Ohio State, Michigan, the John Cooper years, the pain of that, and then you get the Trestle, and Trestle dominates Michigan, and that's the world. So I think there is a generation still struggling with that. I know between my friends, there were a few that were, fire Ryan Day. And then when they won, still should have beat Michigan. And I'm like, well, guys, it's a national title. So, I mean, this is the new world we live in. And I'm wondering, I'm not speculating in any way. I just wonder if someday that the Michigan-Ohio State game gets moved, do they move it around? Because I think the year that Michigan and Ohio State play each other then turn around and play in the Big Ten championship, that's when we'll consider it. But, it has to match up first.
So, Bill, that was my next question, too, because, you've got Texas and Ohio State playing week one, which could be on paper, and talent-wise, could be way bigger than Ohio State, Michigan at the end of the year. And so I guess my question is with games like this early on and knowing what Ohio State did last year, and maybe just going back to your NFL model, it just feels like everything that was in the past has kind of changed as far as what's the goal, what are we trying to do here? Because, I mean, this is a gigantic game, but we also know that there's no way the loser of this game, I shouldn't say no way, but if the loser of this game is probably going to be there when the playoffs roll around, and we'll see Texas, we will have a chance for Texas, yeah. Ohio State again.
It could happen. Now, the difference is, and I talked to Mac Brown last week, 20 years ago, Ohio State and Texas played what I consider my lifetime probably the most memorable non-conference game involving the Buckeyes in the regular season. You know, they were a couple plays away from shutting down Vince Young and winning that game. And as Mac told me, had Ohio State beat Texas that night, they were going to be the team that played USC. So it's weird to think that, like, your national title shot is over in September. And that's, you know, our playoff projections at Sporting is I still have Texas and Ohio State playing in the title game, no matter what happens tomorrow, because I think they'll both figure it out. Now, so how do we resolve Ohio State goes out and wins tomorrow, and it's this great game, and then somehow Texas would beat them in the national championship? I think college football fans would struggle with that, or vice versa, like Texas wins tomorrow, Ohio State wins the title game. It would be very strange.
Bill Bender joining us. He is the senior writer for the Sporting News. We here in the northeastern part of this state, Bill, have this thing with quarterbacks. been looking for one for a while, still looking for one. Tons of quarterbacks coming out in next year's draft. And the Browns are sitting here with two first-round draft picks in next year's draft and with two rookies on the roster right now. If you're sitting here right now, who do you think are the leading candidates that you think would be good NFL quarterbacks out of the college game?
I think Arch is the best prospect out of all of them. And it's just a question of does he come out now or later. And I really don't care how he does tomorrow. I'm saying that, like, if he goes 10 of 22 and they lose and he struggles a little bit, I was like, just wait. You know, I think you'll get the best of Arch over the next 2 years. And if you're you just trust the brand, right? His uncles did okay in the NFL.
Yes.
So, and I think he has that background and all of those things that he will succeed. One game, if you're a Browns fan, you're probably going to want to watch, out of curiosity, you're going to want to watch LSU and Clemson, because those are the guys that are going to get talked a lot in this draft cycle, whether it's Cade Klubnik, a three-year starter, really good numbers, five-star background, or Garrett Nussmeier, kind of I've always described him as like Brett Favre ultralight. You know, he makes the decisions that Brett Favre used to make, but then he'll make some great throws in between. And those are the two guys that could push up into the first round. I don't know if they're franchise savers. I do think if Arch comes out this year and balls out, he'll be the top prospect among that bunch.
I think I'll have my eyes, too, on Penn State, Nevada. I know it should be. I want to see Drew Aller playing against anybody, but to see what Penn State looks like out of the gate here, you know, because I'm just wondering, what do you think the pressure on Aller? And Aller looks like he's, you know, could be another guy the Browns are looking at.
He could, and he's got the physical tools and he has great numbers. And for Drew, he's been criticized some for how they play in the ranked games, but my argument back is typically didn't have best receiver room, you know,
no,
and
didn't.
They did have Tyler Warren last year and that helped. But I think Drew, one of the things he has that I like, I go back to when they lost to Ohio State a couple years ago, and he was so despondent afterward, but the way he owned it. And I'm like, that's a mature quarterback. That's a guy that has that leadership quality that you're going to want at the next level. Now he has to go out and do it. I mean, there are scouts that really liked him. They liked him last year during the playoff run. And, you know, I want to root for a kid like that that's an Ohio kid. But it's a big year for him, not just for him. Penn State is an entirety. When you're ranked number two and you haven't won a national title since 86, that's a lot of pressure.
Bill, how do the Buckeyes finish up this year? What do you see?
I think another deep playoff run. And, you know, I would say this, and it kind of brings our conversation full circle. You can't beat Michigan tomorrow. You don't play Michigan until November 29th. I mean, that's obviously on everybody's mind, ending that streak. I do think the Wolverines are going to be a little bit better this year. They can't be worse on the quarterback side. You know, this freshman, Bryce Underwood, I think he'll be all right. And just getting through the Big Ten, the pressure's off of winning the national title. I can see it a little bit with Ryan Day, but he does default into the, you know, the coach speak that he does. He's a very focused guy and, you know, going to be a pretty good one. His kid, by the way, pretty good quarterback at the high school level. So I think he's happy about that as well.
Yeah. Do you have any insight on pick North St. Ignatius too, since you're in Pickerington? No, I'm just kidding. We've asked you everything else.
Game, man. You know, I hear about the Cleveland, you know, I saw St. Ed, Cleveland, St. Ignatius, pick North, pick Central. Those schools are really good. You know, my son goes to St. Charles. They're up and coming. He played for a guy last year that played up at St. Ed's and then was explaining to me how big the linemen are up there. And I'm like, I weigh 180. Don't count on my son to be that big.
Just be prepared to see all those guys playing D1 next year. I mean, that St. Ed's front offensive line is the entire team is unbelievable. Ed's is.
You have good food up there, obviously, and good programs.
That's
and
true.
Been around for a while, exactly.
Hey, Bill, always great to talk with you. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Bill.
Hey, no problem, guys. Have a great week.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy over there is Andy Baskin.
What a show we've had today so far.
Charles Oakley.
If you miss Charles Oakley, man, you got to go back and listen to that. Don't miss any moments from earlier in our show or any of the other shows. On 92.3 The Fan, click the rewind function on the Odyssey app brought to you by Montrose Ford. Choose, click, cruise at montroseFordAkron.com to listen back to any of our segments from the past 72 hours.
So it finally happened last night, and I'm a little surprised it did. Micah Parsons, traded by the Dallas Cowboys. He goes to the Green Bay Packers. There's somebody wearing a Packers hoodie in here today. Looking darn good in it, by the way.
Is that gloating?
I was going to ask
you. Is that a victory
guys,
walk?
No, it's like shock and glee is what that is.
As a guy who closely follows the Packers, your reaction, Dan Menigan, was?
Dan Menigan, go.
I don't think we have a sensor beep long enough to give my full reaction.
In a good way.
This is the most anti-Packer trade known to man. The Green Bay Packers treat their first, second, third round picks the same way that the Cleveland Guardians treat their prospects. Every single night they hug them very tight before bed and read them their favorite story twice and give them one more last hug before shutting the door and waking them up in the morning to make their favorite breakfast. Like, that's how the Packers treat their draft picks. They have new management in town with Carmen Policy's kid taking over. And something has happened in there with new management and Mark Murphy leaving. And I don't know how to handle it. I saw the trade come down. I looked and saw Ian Rappaport. And I went, well, he must have gotten hacked. And so then I found Adam Schefter. And I thought, well, he must have gotten hacked. And then I went and found the beat reporters. And I went, well, all four of them can't be hacked. Holy bleep.
Did you cry?
No. I blacked out in the bread aisle of a big box store.
Wow.
Had to be waking up with a hot dog under my nose like smelling salt as I laid on the couch at the big box store.
That'll do it.
I'm surprised they didn't use cheese curds on it.
That'll do it.
They didn't sell those at the big box store, and if they did, all the microwaves were taken.
You're surprised Dallas didn't
get a good meal at that big box store. You don't even have to pay for anything.
You kidding me? You just make your way up and down the aisles and hand you all sorts of
good
stuff.
Eat the freebies.
Yeah, they need more drinks, though.
Are you surprised Dallas didn't sign them? Are you surprised that they weren't able to come to any kind of a contractual agreement? And that they had to trade him?
Yes, because we've been down this road so many times with Jerry.
I thought for sure he'd just get his money, he'd be in Dallas.
We went down the road with Dak. They played this game with Dak Prescott. He got paid. They went down this road with Ezekiel Elliott. He got paid. They went down this road with CeeDee Lamb. He got paid. All of them the week before the season started. I figured we were running the same thing. Wednesday, we were going to get an update.
Yep, I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. Brian Schottenheimer even mentioning beforehand, and Brian's the head coach in Dallas, in case you missed that. Hey, we'll have to get him ramped up to speed and blah, 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 blah. He was talking about that.
Yeah. Huh.
And said they trade the guy. Now, they did get a good defensive tackle, three-time Pro Bowler Kenny Clark, who's around 30. So, you know,
30 on the dot.
For a defensive lineman, his best years are probably behind him, but there's no reason to think he can't play for another 5 years.
You're older than Miles Garrett, too.
Yeah.
Big Kenny Clark
is not as good as Miles Garrett.
He's a really good defense tackle for the Cowboys. He'll be really good for them. He's not going to do anything flashy, but he's really good.
Jerry Jones saying, well, you know, we have to stop the run. Yeah, but you have Micah Parsons, dude. You got one of the five best defensive players in the National Football League. And I'm being real generous in saying five because I could probably say two or three. But you traded him. And you get a couple of number ones. I've already seen some thought that Jerry might turn around and try and trade those number one picks for players and bring him in to help this team right now.
Where do you expect those picks? Those picks are going to be on conservatively on the other side of 25, right?
At the very least, Andy, lower side of 20.
Yeah. Two things went through my mind when I saw the deal. One, I'm like, wow, Dallas didn't seem to get enough. And then two, what was the market for Miles? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you look at that,
I would say it would have been comparable. Yes. Because I think Miles is a phenomenal football player.
No way I would have traded Miles to Green Bay for two first round picks and a player. No way I would have done that deal.
Just as if I'm Dallas, I wouldn't have made that trade.
Yeah. Miles is 3 years older.
I would say Miles. I think Miles is terrific. Is he better than Micah Parsons? Maybe. Is he not better than Micah Parsons? Maybe. They're both really, really good. I mean, they're the best two defensive ends in the game, in my estimation. So, value, very comparable. I don't think I'd have made that trade if I was the Browns. I would have wanted more.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Especially when you look at the pay, right? The pay on the other side, and then we trade away three for a guy that barely plays quarterback at all here. This conversation for Miles had to have started with three first-round picks, right? Are we all in agreement on that?
I'm shocked it wasn't three for Parsons.
I can't believe it either.
I'm floored it wasn't three for Parsons. Or, dude's the second or third best pass rusher in football.
Or Clark and a couple of other players and a number one and more.
Jeff, I love Kenny Clark.
And a Hammerschlag.
He's one of my favorite Packers ever, right there with Aaron Jones. Like, right up there. He's not a first-round pick, especially with the contract he's getting paid.
That's why I'm saying, if you're Dallas and you're looking to add to your team, would you wanted to try to pick up a couple of other guys in the deal? You know, it's been...
Could have picked up. Don't you think? I don't... Would Green Bay have... How far would Green Bay have gone with this?
I'm sure they'd have given up another guy or two.
Throwing in a couple mid-round picks, too? A couple
third-round picks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been first and third at the least.
We've heard the idea of a Herschel Walker return on this. This is nowhere close to a Herschel Walker return.
There's no way. What'd they get for Herschel? That was like...
off the top of my head, several players and five or six picks? If I'm not mistaken.
This whole thing kind of made me shake my head.
They got five players in that trade.
Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Allant. And picks in the Herschel trade.
Anthopedia. That's what we'll start calling him. He'll just jump in the middle of the show.
Anthopedia?
He'll be the Anthopedia.
It sounds too close to that store that you walk into and... How do I make
the
this
clothing
nice?
Store?
Yeah, the clothing store. That sounds way too close
to the
clothing
store. It sounds like a class you would take in college?
It's for people.
Right? It's a college class.
100%. And it would be one of those I go, okay, I'll take this because it'll knock out a science requirement. And then midway through, I'll be I'm really sleepy in this first class. I don't know why this is doing this to me.
How many more archaeological digs can we read about that came up empty?
What would you think if, everybody complains about ownership. You know, very rarely do fans not complain about ownership in some way, shape, or form. This owner's the general manager of the team.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a smart move.
It's not George Halas anymore, you know? The league has gone past George Halas days. And Jerry Jones played college football. He played college football at Arkansas. So he knows the game a little bit. Let's be honest and give him credit for that.
Don't we have to say sweet?
He knew how to make a lot of money. He made a lot of money in the oil industry. And then he bought the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
And having worked in Texas, oh my God, it was awful when he bought the Dallas Cowboys because it was Gil Brandt. It was Tex Schramm. It was Tom Landry.
Right.
And Jerry blew it all up. And oh my God, it was sacrilege. You bring in your college teammate, Jimmy Johnson,
right,
who, by the way, is from Port Arthur, Texas.
But I told you it was Port Arthur. Dan and I were yelling. We were going back and forth. Is he from Port Arthur? I couldn't remember.
I thought he was directly from Beaumont. That's on me. Look, we're going to try to get better. Okay, we're getting better every day.
I thought he went to McNeese State.
My point there was he did hire a Texas native to be the coach of the Cowboys. But, you know, it was sacrilege. And they came in and they were really good. You know, I mean, it worked. And then he and Jimmy ended up, you know, kind of at odds, and he brought in Barry Switzer. So he brought in two college coaches.
Yep.
Switzer won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And then once Jimmy's players kind of went by the wayside because Jimmy was the GM and coach, they haven't won since. And that's...
Do I feel bad for him? No, I do. I do feel bad for the fans because they've lost two major stars in, what, 6 months? Is that right?
Yeah.
What's more painful for them? Luka, Parsons?
Luka.
It feels
although in Texas... In Texas football rules, here's the Walker trade to Minnesota that they're comparing this to, and it doesn't begin to compare. They did get five players from the Vikings.
Okay.
And it was Jesse Solomon, linebacker, Isaac Holt, running back, Zaren Nelson, linebacker, David Howard, defensive end, Alex Stewart. So they brought in some guys who could play.
Some guys.
You know, just some guys.
Yeah.
But they also got six future draft choices. And it led to the Cowboys getting these gentlemen, Emmitt Smith, Russell Maryland,
ooh,
Kevin Smith, and Darren Woodson. So it just kind of restarted the whole, you know, that was the...
And they feel like they did a restart on this trade too, with two first round picks. That's what he said.
There was some comparison, the Herschel Walker that Jerry made. They got a player and two picks. Now, can Jerry trade those picks down and get, you know, a couple of thirds and, you know, trade them for... Yeah, you could do all kinds of things. But do you trust Jerry to make the right picks? Mike's in Cleveland. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Well,
good morning.
Morning.
Well, almost noon. Remember when Mike Ditka traded the entire draft
and sat back
Ricky
and
Williams?
Smoked a cigar and watched everybody else work?
Yeah. Yep. Eddie put the ragweed on his head, too. He looked, well, maybe Don Nelson made it for him. I don't know.
I thought same thing.
But
remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think anymore, like, even with Kenny Pickett, I feel that a lot of general managers feel that players are more assets than they are players. You know, and I remember reading stuff from Joe Tate about taxi squads where, like, back in the day, dudes had to drive taxis to make money because they didn't have jobs and didn't get paid well, you know, and now it's crazy like that. But I just wanted to interject because, you know, I'm goofy like that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, we like goofy, Mike. Thank you very much. We'll see if it pays off for the Dallas Cowboys. All I know is... Micah Parsons is one of the premier defensive players in the National Football League and will be for a while. He's only 26 years old. And now he's a Green Bay Packer. Congratulations, Dano.
Yeah, you should feel good about that.
I don't know this feeling well enough to know what to do with it. I don't know how to handle it. I'm going to get there. I'm processing to this point. We'll get there.
You know, I've seen some people write, the last time the Packers did something that
don't
was this.
Don't say it. Do not put this in the ether.
Yes.
No.
Put it out there.
Hush.
Stop.
Say it. Bad Jeff.
Good Jeff.
When they went out and brought in.
Yeah, who, Jeff?
Another defensive lineman who became a minister. I'll just pass that along. Signed him as a free agent after he played in Philadelphia.
I'm not putting that on Jordan Love.
I'm not going to mention the name Reggie White.
God, you suck.
I won't do that.
Why am I friends with you?
You don't have a choice. We work together.
I love it. I watch your misery. I enjoy that.
I try really hard not to be like a jerk at any point in life, and yet you're over here being a jerk.
Yeah,
I was just making.
Why you gotta be a jerk?
I was just making a sports point.
You see, he asked you not to walk down that road.
Don't put that hate on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't you put that hate on me.
Let's just go ahead and have a family dinner at Applebee's and call it a day, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, next six games, the Guardians' season is on the line. Can they do it? Where's your confidence level? Can they pull it off? Despite the fact that they can't hit 216-474-0092, it's Baskin and Phelps on the Fan.